Blog Talk Radio.
Stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. It once again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Well, good evening. I would like to welcome the world to the Stop Child Abuse Now Talk Radio Show, sponsored by NASCA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Penelope Bennett, and I am from Bellevue, Washington. I'm here with our CEO and founder of NASCA, Bill Murray, from Now, California. And thank you for being on my host team tonight, Bill. And tonight is a special guest night. We have a very special guest this evening. Her name is Kathleen Pizzutello. Pizzutello, I'm probably butchering your last name, Kathleen. I forgot to ask you how to pronounce it, so please accept my apologies. But Kathleen's from Robertsdale, Alabama. And I'll get a little bit more to Kathleen in a moment. But before I do, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about NASCA and our mission. So, as you know, NASCA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, is all about child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. We have a single purpose at NASCA, to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas and neglect, and we do so with two goals. The first, we want to educate the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second goal, we want to offer hope and healing. We offer numerous paths at NASCA, including this Blog Talk Radio Show, which is on 5 nights a week. We provide many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So if you wish to be a part of our panel this evening, I'd highly encourage you to do so. I see our panel is growing right now, which I know our special guest very much appreciates, as do I. The number to call in to be a member of the panel is area code 646-595-2118. Again, that number is area code 646-595-2118. No experience necessary. You'll have an opportunity to interact with our special guest and ask her a question regarding her story. And this is her night. So before I go a little bit more into some background on Kathleen, I just wanted to talk about how the show is structured. So the show is 90 minutes, which goes by really fast. And we do break up the show into roughly three segments. And we do it on special guest night chronologically through age. So we start at the very earliest years, from the earliest memory, you know, birth throughout the age of 18. We then break to the panel, and the panel has an opportunity to ask Kathleen a question about her story. The second segment is really the middle years from 18 to 30 or 35, I guess, depending on how old you are, right? Depends on when the middle years would end. Then we break to the panel again. We try and break to the panel twice during the show. And then the last segment of the show is really the healing process and life up to the present moment and what the guest is doing now in terms of their works. And I know that Kathleen's doing some really amazing things. So I always love the third segment of the show, which is really more about the recovery part. So without further ado, I wish to talk a little bit about Kathleen. So Kathleen is from Robertsdale, Alabama, and she was born in the New Jersey ghetto to a 15-year-old prostitute and heroin addict. So because of her mother's, she was given over to her mentally ill grandmother, and her home life was torture with two hateful sisters and her torturous mother. So Kathleen states, at 17, I moved out with my first room rental, and the married couple's husband raped me. Many photographers approached me to photograph me, often drugging me. Beginning, I'm going to stop there because there's a lot more to Kathleen's story and give you a little more information on her bio as we go through the segments. But because this takes us to the age of 17 plus, I'm going to now open up Kathleen's mic and welcome her. So, Kathleen, you're on, and I wish to welcome you this evening.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to this.
Well, we are so appreciative that you're here. This is a platform for our adult survivors to have their voice heard by telling their stories. So we appreciate you, your courage. I think it takes a lot of courage to come on the show and to share the truth of our childhood abuse and of our life. And I think it's healing to tell the truth and to talk to other survivors. But I think we also just give a little part of ourselves because of a little trauma involved as we relive those memories. So I wish to thank you. I think it's very courageous. And I'd like
thank
to
you. I agree. Yeah, I agree. I just wanted to add that, unfortunately for me, it wasn't just childhood memories, as I'll share with you. Much of what the abuse was went into even, I'd say, recent adult life.
Yeah. Right. And I hear you, and I know it's unfortunate because a lot of the times that is the case. That is the case. And just because just for some context, we actually archive these shows. And so we have actually a lot of our adult survivors that are in different stages of the healing process. They go back and listen to the archive shows. It helps them to on their healing journey. And so I would, we don't have to spend a lot of time because I know that, you know, our life story is our life chronology. Just for us to understand, you know, a little bit of your origin and what your life was like in the beginning to kind of paint that picture, that backdrop, if you will, if you wouldn't mind, just if we start there and then move through it, if you're okay with that.
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about, just, you know, I read it about, you know, you were born, the family you were born into, and maybe, you know, who your earliest memories and what your life was like in those early childhood years.
Sure, you know, and I just want to kind of clarify something. You know, one of the things that I realized a lot was that when there is so much abuse, a lot of that abuse comes generationally. In other words, what I realized and learned about my own abuse and how much I suffered, I looked into my mother and her mother and even her mother, so my great-grandmother. And so that generational stuff almost seems to be even more helpful when you're exploring your past and even your first days or your first years of life, right? And that being said, Penelope, I'll tell you that my first 6 years of life was in Camden, New Jersey, and this was a very dangerous place, rated like the most dangerous city in the United States for many, many years. And my mother was 15 years old, and she gave me to her mother. Now, if you can picture, this is kind of important, but it's kind of difficult, but my grandmother and my great-grandmother lived across the street from each other, and my 15-year-old mother had given my two sisters to my great-grandmother, and she gave me to my grandmother, and she left. So now we were across the street from each other, and it was my grandmother that had been a prostitute and a heroin addict, not my mother. And my grandmother had a procedure called a lobotomy. This was for heroin addiction. Mm-hmm. In the day, they used to do these things. And she raised me from the time I was born to six years old. And to be in that house with her for all those years without any real contact with the outside world was very, very hard. It was, now, of course, I didn't know it at the time, but I could hear the children playing outside, jumping rope and laughing. And my sisters were across the street, but I had almost no contact with them. And occasionally I would get across the street to see my sisters, very rarely. But whenever I did, I always knew something was very dark there. And it was my great-grandfather. He was American Indian descent. He was an alcoholic, and he was a very creepy man. I mean, I knew that just even, you know, intuitively as a child. So I lived with my grandmother, and I had a protector in my grandmother's house. He was an Italian mafia man, and he took care of me, and he kept me safe as much as he could. But being with my grandmother was very, very difficult. She was like a robot. And around my bath times, she would always perform these enemas on me. And I would scream, I would cry. And I was a very, very lonely child, very lonely child. I couldn't, I had no toys. She was a robot. And so that was my first 6 years of life. And then my mother returned, and she got my two sisters from across the street, and she asked if we would like to go for a ride in her car. Now, I only remembered her as this lady with yellow hair. I didn't know she wasn't my mother. Nobody ever explained anything. So we got in the car, and in order for me to go for a ride in the car, which was a big deal for me, imagine, I had no contact, and if I could see my sisters, it was, you know, a big thing. So if I mm-hmm. could ride in the car, I had to have a blindfold on. So she blindfolded me. And that would be the last I would ever see the people, my grandparents, who I thought were my parents. And I went off to a new life with a mother that despised me, really didn't treat me ever. I mean, it was just a horrible, horrible thing, because she related to me as her mother. You know, she had that generational hatred for her own mother. And so I grew taller than my two sisters, and my mother decided that I would make a good model. I was tall and thin. And at 14, she, with a lover she had that was kind of a TV exec, decided that I would go lie about my age, and they sent me across the bridge to Philadelphia to a TV station, and I became a publicity model. And I was missing school all this time, right? But I was bullied in school and bullied by my sister. So, you know, it was another world for me, and I just tried to fit in. And when I was at that TV station, I saw and heard a lot of things that a young girl, I was a tomboy. I loved horses, you know, so that whole world was just thrusted onto me, and I didn't understand it. And it was a lot of, you know, older girls, and they dress us up in these outfits, and they would sort of service these TV execs, and I would be outside waiting for them, and I could hear it all going on, and nobody would ever touch me. And for years this went on, and I thought, And basically what we would do is they would dress us up and we would escort like sports figures and rock stars and stuff like that, and hold things up, right? So, but I nobody ever approached me, and I thought, oh, this is good because I'm special, you know, maybe I. And then one day this president of the TV radio station asked me to go for a ride in his vintage car, and off we went driving, and he pulled over off of the Philadelphia road, and he asked me if I was on the pill, and he kissed me, and I was 17. He had to be in his 60s at least or so, and he said, you know, you'll need to be on the pill to do the next ad in the Caribbean, and are you? And I said, oh, yes. And then I got back to the TV station, and I drove back to my home in Jersey, and, I mean, I cried the whole way, and I lost that job. And I had been at that job from the time I was 14 to 18. So that was very hard for me because I knew I could not be like the other girls. And I moved out, and that's when I moved in with a couple, a married couple, and the husband came into my bedroom and raped me. And that's sort of kind of my childhood, you know, in a kind of a nutshell. I mean, it was very, very difficult. I'll add one other thing, and that is that my mother, when she got me to get into this modeling world with her lover that was this TV exec, they would meet at these stables that I would go to as a kid, and she would use me to babysit in his house. And I could go to the stables and ride if I came back with a good report about his married life. So I became sort of a secret holder, right? Like I had all these secrets even as a kid and as a teenager. And so that was really hard for me, you know? Yeah, that's kind of how I started life.
Well, all I can say is, you know, thank you for sharing what you've shared. And you're so articulate, by the way. You're so well-spoken and articulate. And there's so much there that I think it's a great time to take a break and break to the panel. And just to let you know, we've got a very robust panel. So that's that. You've got a lot of support here, which is wonderful. So thank you. Our panel members are Bill, my co-host, and Tamika Chambers from Oregon, who's an ambassador, Kim Lakin from Colorado, who's also an ambassador, and Ekaterina, I believe. So Ekaterina, I believe you're from Canada. So we haven't spoken in a while, so I wish you welcome this evening. So we have a growing, a wonderful panel, and you know, before I bring on Bill, I just wanted to say there's so much of what you had shared that struck me, resonated with me, and I, you know, one of the things that really, a lot of it did, so I'm just, you know, everything was very profound, but one of the things that really registered with me as well was there is that multi-generational cycle of abuse in a lot of our families and a lot of our history. And I can relate to that as there's a multi-generational cycle in mine. I'm the first one that's spoken and done the recovery. And I understand how hard that is with the multi-generational aspect to be the one to step out and to address it. And I almost wonder, I don't know what your thoughts are on this, and so this is my question. I always used to wonder, you know, the longer it has happened, right, over generations, you know, does it compound over generations? I don't know. I feel that it does. I don't know. So it's just like, you know, a big snowball, right? It starts at the top, and it becomes an avalanche. But, of course, when we're the first ones to speak of the abuse and bring up the truth of the abuse and talk about it, then we can say what actually happened. And so when it's hidden in secrecy, maybe it's, we don't know, right? We know that it's multi-generational. We know that there's abuse there. But when it's secret and a lot of those older generations pass away, a lot of times what they kept inside goes with them. So I don't know. But I do know how difficult it is to be the one, and I commend you for that.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. And, you know, our stories, our lives are also very personal, right? But at the same time, if we carry someone else's pain with us, like my mother, right? My mother said she was an only child, and she said that she had such hatred for her own mother because she turned tricks with her in the room when she was a little girl. And she was named after Shirley Temple. So, but my mother, you know, like out of desperation, right? So she gave me, ended up giving me to this woman that she hated. But she refused until 2 years ago. She refused to acknowledge that there was incest and even more. And all the years that I kept saying, look, Mom, as I become a mother, I only want to address what will help us all to begin to heal. And yet she would not, and she would not until 2 years ago when she finally acknowledged that what went on across the street, not with her own mother, but with her own, the man that was the Indian across the street with my two sisters. So, and when she described that in detail to me, it took 12 hours locked in a room together. And I wouldn't let my mother deny it any longer. I just kept saying, Mom, I love you too much to let you pass on with all of this. And I love my sons too much for them to carry it on generationally. So she broke. She broke open like it was just like a floodgate. And, you know, she reverted to be like this little child, and she began to tell me in detail stuff that went on in that house across the street that, you know what, I don't think that I can even tell it to you, but you can imagine it was horrific, horrific. And then I had different eyes to see my mother. But imagine 60-some years that of my life that she refused. She refused. So, you know, we carry these things and generationally, and you're right, it's just, it compounds. It absolutely compounds. And sometimes it's only ourselves that we can address. But you long, you look back and you long for those before us that you say, well, I knew my grandmother, you know?
Absolutely. You stated it so exactly, so perfectly. I couldn't have said it better. And that totally resonates with me because it's true. Absolutely. Because there's that compassion that once you understand, there's that empathy and compassion because we know the pain. We've lived the pain. But you gave your mother a gift. I'm also hearing this and I have chills, right? I have total chills. Literally the hair on my arms is standing up because I know, and I believe a lot of the panel can relate to this. I hate to speak for anybody, but as survivors, we know because she was able to release it. That was a gift. You aced her of her relational pain. You gave her a gift. That is incredible.
Well, you know, to be honest with you, and I appreciate you saying that, well, let's just go on because there's a lot to that, but there's so much more that I just kind of want to talk about when we marry into this kind of stuff, because even though it comes down generationally, it seems like, at least it was for me, that I'm also, you know, finding that I was attracted to the almost the same setup. You know,
yes, and I do understand. And Kathleen and I spoke before the show, and she, the middle segment, the marriage, is something that she just wants to spend some time on. So we're 25 minutes in. A lot of that's my fault. I am going to open up to the panel and just ask them to keep it short to a minute or so that we have time, a lot of time, to hit on what you want to hit on in the middle segment. So I'm going to invite Bill on. Bill Murray, our CEO and founder of NASCA. And Bill, thank you for being on my host team this evening.
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to be here for you. And, of course, also for our special guest. This is just quite a story. I am the person that puts the final touches on a person's bio and then posts them. So if I've made a mistake with your mixing something up between your mother and your grandmother, you now know who to blame. It's me. But regardless, that's okay. The theme that you were just asked about by Penelope about the generational aspects of this, how it gets passed on from one inside the family, generation after generation, absolutely happens. And I think it does expand because, you know, one predator affects more than one person. It's just not an equal ratio. Most predators have multiple victims, if you want, yes, it could easily expand within the family, and then of course outside the family as well. So I agree, this is not unusual. It's not that unusual anyway. And you'll find a lot of people have if they've been able to look back, and let's say their mother was their predator, they found out that her mother was her mother's predator, was their predator, you know, and so forth, or grandpa or something like that. Kathleen has a big story. I don't want to take too much time, but I do want to just say again how much we appreciate your being here, and we really thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Bill. I appreciate that as well.
Of course.
So did you want me to continue from
thank
where
you, Bill.
I ended?
Oh, actually, we've got a few more people to bring on. So we've got three more on our panel. If you're okay if I bring them on, give them an opportunity.
Oh, sure.
Yes. So I'm now going to bring on Tamika Chambers from Oregon, and Tamika is our Oregon ambassador. And Tamika, I just want to say thanks for being here this evening, and you're on with Kathleen.
Hi, thank you so much. I just love it, Kathleen, your story, because you have several themes within your story, such a courageous voice person. One, that nothing happens overnight. We're talking about a generational and cross-generational issue, that there is pain within these generations, and unfortunately, many people don't know how to deal with their pain. And therefore, children are affected, you know, young and old, they're affected by this pain. And we, like you said, have to make a choice. We choose whether or not we want to carry on this pain or if we want to break the cycle of pain. And that's the second point that you talked about, was breaking the cycle, even going to your mother and talking to her. And it was not only a gift, and I appreciate that, a gift to your mother that was stated, but it also was a gift to yourself, because you confirmed within you by telling her, having her, talking to her, that you did not want to continue this cycle of pain. So kudos to you for having the courage to step up, because often as children, we fear that. We fear the unknown. We fear how our parents will act towards us, because they're the ones that are supposed to help us, you know, teach us the way. And unfortunately, we have many parents, older people, grandfathers, grandmothers, that are still dealing with pain and don't know how to address it. So my question to you is that when did you realize the generational cycle that was occurring, and then how did it help you to heal from within? How did you use that to help yourself?
Well, thank you for those encouraging words. That's really so received. I really love to hear encouraging words about this, because it's still very painful. As I say, this 12 hours that we had in this room just happened a couple of years ago. And as you say, you know, you can see your parents locked down, weighed down with this secrecy. And I started, I think when I was a child and I saw my great-grandfather, you know, putting his hands up my little sister's dresses, and yet I was protected in some strange sense, even though it was with a woman who had had a lobotomy across the street. when I was a child, I sensed it. And then I was always the one to ask questions as a kid. Now, I always got beat up for that. I mean, literally beaten for it. And then I became a mother in my late 30s. And I traveled home to New Jersey from Buenos Aires, where my child was born. And there was a snowstorm. And I was in my mother's bedroom, and she welcomed me with my baby and my first child, and we began to have this talk, and I said, "Mom, I'm a new mom. I don't want him to grow up with this stuff, and I want to know." There was incest in the family, and it was across the street, and do you know that she kicked me out in that snowstorm with a four-month-old baby? And I never had ever any real connection with the family because I stood my truth about it until recently. So it's a weird thing, you know. I kept at it all throughout my life, and I really just always sought for healing. I wasn't trying to expose anybody. I just know that there's no way around it. You must go through it, and it's not comfortable. But let me tell you, ignoring it, living a lie, that's even worse. So I was able to have this time with her just a couple years ago. And afterwards, she asked me to give her a massage. And, you know, I still had all this bad feeling towards my mother, but things had just changed the next day from that time together, you know. And I gave her a massage, and she wept like a broken child, and I let her weep, and then I kissed her on the forehead. And I have not spoken to her since, because she will not have contact with me. So it's a little bittersweet.
Yeah. But and may I say, because I know we have to get on, thank you so much for sharing that. You are truly like recognizing that truth as a young child and acting out on it. And sometimes people are not ready where you are in your life, in healing, in searching for truth and in finding truth. And so may I say, I mean, I'm just truly thankful that you are owning your truth, and you're just really adamant about not continuing this on. And, you know, unfortunately that happens. People are not ready, but it's great that you are the light within the darkness. So thank you so much, Kathleen, for all the things that you have done and what you've been through and your voice today. I look forward to hearing more. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
I'm sorry. So we've got actually two more panelists, if I could bring
okay.
them on real quick.
Okay.
Yeah. So
sure.
Thank you, Tamika. So we have Kim Lakin from Colorado. And Kim, I'm just going to unmute your mic and bring you on with Kathleen. Hi, Kim.
Hey. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
I just want to say real quick, thank you so much for being so vulnerable and sharing your story.
Thank you.
Yes, you're doing
amazing.
You're doing awesome. So I don't want to take up much time either. Tanika said a lot of what I was going to say, which is fine. I have had that multi-generational thing too, and I just know how hard it is then to recognize and change your whole family trajectory. And you're amazing. Thank you for all you're doing.
Thank you.
Because you're not only helping your son, I don't know if you have other children or not, but you're helping others. I mean, there's this whole ripple effect, right, of then when your son has kids, and then he's going to be protective of that and want to, you know, uphold that safety
right.
for his children.
Right.
So thank you for all that you do.
Thank you. And thank you for saying that.
Thank you, Kim.
Okay,
so true.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kim. Well, and Tamika and Kim, we so appreciate you being on tonight and on the panel and supporting our special guest. And I'm now going to bring on Ekaterina from Canada. Ekaterina, you're on with Kathleen. Nice to see your name up there.
So nice to hear your voice again. It's good to be on. Kathleen, wow. I mean, I usually do call in once in a while. I love this show, even though I'm in Canada. Canadians do listen in as well. It's just, I mean, I was crying. I was bawling my eyes out, okay? I was having like a crisis moment in the bedroom as I'm listening to you, because I saw a lot of myself in you, like in a different situation, of course, but I also have a mom that, rejects me in her own way, you know, and it's very painful. Transgenerational trauma, it's very painful, and especially as adults, you get to that point where you see the other person as they are, and you say, hey, I see you, like, this is who you are, we've been through this, these things happen, and I just want to talk about it. Like, when you had that first conversation, it sounded like, in your 30s, it sounded like you wanted closure, and you didn't get that, and I can't even imagine how you were feeling, like, with a 4-month baby still recovering as a new mom, you know, hormones are going crazy still, trying to get back to homeostasis. It's just hard. It's hard. You've been through so much, and the secret, I mean, you're speaking it, and I think a lot of us feel, listeners, we feel like we're alone, and then when we hear stories like yours, we're like, wow, I thought my life was bad, you know, and it is bad, it was bad, but it's like, whoa, this is like a whole new level, it's not okay, like, these conversations need to come up, because it's happening behind closed doors, like, this is criminal activity. Some of our parents are psychopaths, sociopaths. In your case, your grandmother, you know, the lobotomy, that's a disability. She also had a physical disability that was hidden. You know, it's sad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm so sorry you had to go through that, but you're very powerful. You really are. Thank you for speaking.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Ekaterina.
Thank you.
It's so well said. I totally agree. So thank you. And thank you for being on. I know you might be on other nights on the shows, but I haven't seen you. I mean, I miss interacting with you, so, and that's why I mentioned that. But so thank you, and I'm happy that you're here. So thanks, and I'm going to be back on. You mentioned Kathleen. I mean, your maltreatment, the multiple different forms of maltreatment from different people in your life, you know, sometimes when we grow up in that, we know that that's our normal. Before we go through the healing, we end up being in those types of relationships, and sometimes we've used those cycles continue as we go through life. And I know that you mentioned that you did want to talk about in the middle segment and throughout the show your marriage. So I'm just going to read a little bit more from your bio,
okay,
and then let you take it from there, if that's okay. So
sure, absolutely.
So. Let's see here. So basically, actually, I'm not going to read anymore because I think you've touched upon a lot of it. Let's go on. Let's go on into what you want to go into about your marriage and about how that cycle had continued.
Yeah, and I here's where I'll kind of pick up, and this is important because I had so just a completely low self-esteem after, you know, being raped and having an abortion at 18. And then a young man came through my hometown in South Jersey, and he was with a hotel company, but he was formerly with Playboy, and his father was Hugh Hefner's partner, Chicago, and he offered to take me away. And of course, you know, I would have done anything to get out of my life at that time. And so I ran away with him, with the hotel company, and I lived in Hyatt hotels for 10 years all around the United States. Now, this was a good-looking, very talented hotel man who was an alcoholic and a drug addict, highly functional. And we lived in these hotels, Hyatt Regency Atlanta. I mean, it was just an unbelievable lifestyle all over the place. And he loved to play with guns, so he would hold guns to my head. But remember, I had no sense of self besides my looks. In school, whenever I was in school, I was always bullied. And now when I did commercials and I became a model, now everybody liked me. So my identity was tied up in my looks. And I landed in, after, you know, 10 years, I'm in almost 30, and I land in Hollywood, California. And I had a very dear friend there that was a comic at the Comedy Store. He was a big brother of mine back in Jersey. He was my sister's boyfriend. And he helped me to get a little apartment in Hollywood. And I began to work at the movie lot, the MGM Studios in Culver City during the day. And at night, I would hang out with the comics at the Comedy Store. But I was protected, because my big brother, he told all the other comics, you know, hands off. She's like my little sister, because he knew I had been abused for 10 years with these abusive men, right? He just said, look, just come here, stay here. And the comics started to protect me as like a little sister. And they saw me always with these, and they would tell me to stay away from these abusive men. Well, I met the answer to my life. And it was an Argentine model. And he was the Gillette guy on television. The guy just was gorgeous. And I had the lust of the eyes thing going on. And the comics told me, do not run away with this guy. Well, he invited me to go to Buenos Aires, Argentina, and meet his family. And 4 months later, I found myself being, you know, wooed by this Italian family in Buenos Aires, Argentina. I didn't speak any Spanish. I had never really traveled that far. It was all very exotic and very, very alluring, very romantic. It was just unbelievable. And his father was military. So I land there with his sister's wedding, and they're celebrating, and it's, you know, his father in this beautiful naval uniform, and I decide that's what I want, that family for me, because I'd never really had family before. So I marry him. And during the wedding in Buenos Aires, I'm tipped off to look into the family I'm marrying into. And I go totally, I leave my country. I'm like hook, line, and sinker going to be, you know, an Argentine aristocrat with this family. And I take that warning and I just kind of sock it away in my head. And I'm kept as a well-kept aristocrat with live-in maids and guards. And I live across the street from the Canadian ambassador. And I'm living this life like an expatriate diplomat. It is just bizarre. Just bizarre. But I was abused, and I married him thinking, well, he's not an alcoholic like my hotel man, and he won't beat me up, and he won't hold guns to my head, but at least, you know, I'll be a wife and maybe I can become a mother. But he was a sex addict, and he traveled the Western Hemisphere and left me there. And it was a really rough beginning, I can tell you that. So the family didn't like me because I began to ask questions, and but the country had already just finished their own deep secret, which was called the Dirty War, and that was something in the 80s and the 70s. They had a coup of their government, and the history of Evita Perón and Juan Perón. And I mean to tell you, if I could have landed anywhere in the world that was a generational place of holding secrets, it was this country and this family. And there I was, this inquisitive Yankee, right, with being tipped off at my wedding. Now, a lot of things went on, and I mean, you would not even believe how many dramatic things. My sister, my older sister, was abducted at my wedding. But the thing is, there were always these warnings. I had so many flags, so many warnings, but I was just rebellious. I thought I could fix him. I thought I could love him enough. I thought I could, you know, I don't know. It was just foolishness because he just kept me there. And he used me for smuggling things into the country. And I thought this was all actually kind of neat, you know, containers filled with goods from the U.S. Everything was about exploiting me. So I was exploited for him having a residence card and the U.S. employment and money. I was just exploited in every way. And yet I really didn't want to ever admit it. I just thought, if I can just suffer through it, I'll be okay. And finally, I got pregnant, and he had this family dark history with this dirty war of torturing people and detention camps and the grandfather that was decorated by Hitler. And I mean, we're talking about generational secrets made my family look like nothing, right? I mean, really deep torture of people. And now I'm pregnant, and he takes me to his childhood home. And as I'm pregnant, he doesn't really acknowledge the pregnancy. He doesn't want to be a father. He says he doesn't believe me that I'm pregnant. And he takes me to this childhood home in Buenos Aires along the coast of Argentina. And it is a Navy base, a big infamous Navy base. And I am sensing now, I think that because survival was always part of who I was growing up, I had become very intuitive. I had a sense, partially some of it I think was developed for, you know, self-protection. I don't know if I was just born with a lot of intuitive senses, but he walked me around this base for 3 days with knowing torture had gone on there. I mean, deep torture. And he would not tell me anything. And then I suffered through the marriage. I got counseling and more counseling. And I kept thinking the problem was just that we needed to build a home, or we needed another child. These were always just foolishness for thinking that this would help, you know, the cycle of abuse. But I went for it again. I had a second son, and we had built this big, incredibly beautiful home with maids' quarters and a country club. And he came to me and he said, now I'm married to him 14 years now. And I am proficient in Spanish. I'm plugged into a church, an American church down there, and I begin to work with the poor of Argentina, because I can put all the wealthy expats, the foreigners, all their money into the orphanages of Argentina. And so I begin to do all this out of my own, you know, trying to help myself. I always felt so lost and sad for suffering children. And I think in some ways it was trying to rescue my own child self in some ways. But he came to me and he said, I need to go to China or India to find my spirit. And he leaves me with all this debt in this huge house with a maid and a 4 and a 6 year old. And he disappears to India. And that's really where my spiritual journey began. And my American pastor put me and my boys on a boat, and we began a journey out of Argentina. And I landed back in the U.S. as a single mother in a shelter. I went into a shelter in Florida. We went from living a high life in Argentina to living in a shelter. My children had never, there's no blacks in Argentina, okay? They've all gone up to Paraguay and Brazil. It's a long story throughout history, but basically there are no real blacks in Argentina. So for them to see, you know, 16, 17-year-old black boys in a shelter for abused children was just amazingly difficult. And I was always a hands-on mom, but I was suicidal. I didn't know how to take that, you know, make those, that transition. I didn't know what was going to happen to us. And things were happening in that shelter that were, I mean, screams during the night. I remember them bringing a naked, drugged out woman in that had been, and they hit her with an ice pick. And my children are exposed to this. And I am trying to make like a home in this little room we're in. And that began my life with my ex-husband coming after me, claiming that I had kidnapped my children using his government and his family power. And I endured a 4-5 day trial for international kidnapping. And I lost my children to an abuser for the first time.
I can't even imagine how are you feeling about breaking to the panel in the moment. Sorry, go on.
Okay. What I get, I think maybe I'll just finish the story so that you have an idea that for the next 10 years, I fought my own government and uncovered that secret in Argentina about the family and their power. And I kept thinking, how could my government do this to my own children and become the biggest abuser? Because these are the people that are set up, federal judges, pastors, social workers. We're talking about a system that is so completely broken that they become the abusers. And yet, when my children were sent back into Argentina, I went back in there and I was tortured there. And it's an unbelievable story because we escaped essentially twice, and I'm the only two-time Hague survivor, Hague Convention on Child Abduction survivor. And yet, you know, when they hold up a poster of you that's on Interpol and it says that you are wanted for crimes against children when you've been living in the mountains of Georgia and the mountains of Tennessee, hiding out from your own government because they're all so corrupt, and the power of the Argentine family, you think, how could they still reach me, the family that knew Hitler, and the family of the Che Guevara, and the family? That's impossible. But you know what? I'll end this part by saying my ex-husband was such a skilled abuser that he held up a letter from Washington, D.C. while he was still in the States and visiting my children, and the trial was coming, and he said, I'm going to use your own country to get you. And I never believed it. I never believed it. And I'll just say this, Penelope, what makes you survive this generational thing is when a mother has not enough power to save herself anymore, because they tried to kill me on the streets of Argentina. They tried to take me out so many different times, this powerful family. But you know what? When a mother sees their own child suffering the way they suffered as a child, and then you know that your own mother, so then you're knowing this, you rise up. You rise up. There's a strength that rises up and says, well, maybe I couldn't save myself, but I am going to do everything to my death to save these children.
And I think that is authentically who you are, because you possess that. Telling your story, and you had said in the beginning of this segment about, well, you know, I married foolishly. I think the word you used is foolishly married this man who I felt like could change, right? I thought about that pattern of behavior a lot before we go through the healing process, but specifically with your story. And yes, I mean, a lot of the times we just marry what we know
what we think is normal, but I think there's a part of us too, which is why we're survivors and we're going through the healing process, that has this drive to always look and hope and believe that there's something better, that we can change something that's bad. And we want to. We have that drive. And I think it's that drive. I think the statistic is 70% of child abuse survivors do not abuse and go on to the healing process, and 30%, you know, continue the cycle. But I believe, and when you were saying that, that this is, yes, right, we can't, nobody can change unless they want to inherently. We can't change anyone. But I think it's that desire to help, that things are different, that want things to be different, that also helps us get to the point where we start the healing process and go through recovery and stay in recovery. And so, yes, I understand for some of us, and I can resonate because you put it out there, are you willing to risk it all to stay on the path of recovery, to do this because you want to break the cycle, because you want to give it as a gift to your children, because you don't want them to carry those burdens? I understand the sacrifice and the pain of that, but that's also the strength. And that's what you have, not in your story, that's really resonating with me. You inherently have always had, you have that strength. And we're willing to risk it all.
It's a choice that I vacillated. I went back and forth with a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I wanted to die so many times. I thought, well, if they don't kill me, I'll just kill myself, you know? And then I think I had, you know, it really was my own son took matters into their own hands as teenagers that gave me the strength to say, they know enough of the truth of both my own family generational abuse and the history of their father's family, because it was really my son that found, you know, the medals from Hitler and my father-in-law on a list with Nazi war criminals, and uncovered much of the puzzle. So now it's almost like it was time for me to pass the baton on to them and say, well, guys, you're men now. You're 16 and 17 years old, but they weren't 16 and 17. The things they did were heroic, and that's what gave me hope. Heroic, what my younger son did. My older son, too. It got on Good Morning America, what he did, and he faced down the history of the family. And, I mean, it's you want to talk about heroic? That two teenage boys, those were the heroes of this story, not me. And where my younger son is today, that's what gives me the hope.
Which is incredible, incredible. But I think maybe not in this instance, but you've got to be modeling some of that in the work that you've done and the work that you're doing for your son. Because I believe it's truly a heroic effort that you're making to address the cycle and break the cycle as you are. It is. I think children observe that. I truly believe that. And I think a lot of it's modeled. And sometimes they don't realize we're modeling it, and sometimes they don't think that we're making any progress or that our children. Sometimes I wonder, are my kids going to really think healing is messy? You know, am I doing more harm than good? Am I accomplishing my goal of breaking the cycle so, as you stated, they don't have to carry those burdens. I cannot pass them on to them. But to me, your story, there's got to be something there as well. You know, they're observing it and they're modeling it.
Well, I will just say that with the amount of trauma they had as children, they ended up hospitalized after Two U.S. federal judges sent them back into Argentina with no voice in these federal trials. They never had a voice. Dylan, my older son that was 14, was called into the chambers of this Atlanta federal judge, and he said to the judge, "I will throw myself off of this building if you send me back again." And the judge did. And then he ended up hospitalized. So, you know, it's they have trauma that is very, very deep. They're in a process. This doesn't make it any easier on the holidays when the parents, the moms, the dads, the ones that stand in the gap and say, sometimes I just need to stand in the truth, and it's Christmas or it's a birthday or you're wondering where the heck your kid is, and yet they'll send one text message that just says, "I love you, Ma. Praying for you." And it's like they're still needing more time, and especially boys. I think especially boys, to be honest with you, you know. So I have a whole opinion about, you know, what we can do better and what we need to do better as a culture for these third culture kids, these kids that come from two country backgrounds. We certainly don't have laws in place that can help protect them better, like our domestic violence laws. That's something I'd, you know, want to share with you maybe down the end of the program. But the healing is ultimately in each, like you said, each one of us individually, and hopefully we give them enough to make them take their own stand for truth, because there's a cost. There's such a cost. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, there's a saying that says, you know, I'd rather stand in truth than die on my knees, you know, kind of an idea. I had to make that choice, and I would fluctuate a lot. I would flounder a lot. I'd flip-flop, you know. Let me live under this lie. Oh, I've got all these, you know, I've got this lifestyle of being well-kept, and how could I complain? And but that meant that I still had to live with the big secrets, right? And and that causes illness in the body. I mean, I couldn't be a storehouse for secrets anymore, not from my family and definitely not from his family. And I'm being asked to keep this a secret. I'm being asked to keep it a secret. And you know what? I can't do it. I can't do, it's not, there's no lukewarm on this. This is no lukewarm. You're either free or you're not free. So choose now or choose later. That's the way I see it.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you. And there was another survivor professional that came on, and I wish I could remember who. It was a guest on the survivor professional night, and so I hate not to give credit where credit's due, but I do replay this one phrase that she used in my head. It's not my fault, but it is my fight. It's not my fault, but it is my fight. I always say to myself, my own words are, it's not my mess, but I got to clean it up, you know, regarding healing. It wasn't my mess, but I've got to clean it up. I got to stay the course. You know, it's not my fault, it is my fight. And a lot of days it just feels like a fight. We have 25 minutes left. I'm afraid to the panel. We continue on. So I'm going to invite Bill back into the conversation. So Bill, you're back on with Kathleen.
I had to unmute myself. Thank you, though. Boy, what a story, huh? I told you. I promised it. You know, the issue that I want to speak to very briefly is the issue of your fight against your own government, as you put it. We used to do a whole series of shows where we talked about weekly the damage that was being done by things like family courts and foster care systems and sometimes hospitals for medical abuse and so forth. And it was the abuses that have, you know, institutional abuse, basically. And it was, you know, it's shocking for a lot of people who don't know how much of this goes on. But the point was that we believed that, you know, there were plenty of children being abused inside these systems who were already, they were probably introduced to the system most of the time because of something traumatic in their life that had already occurred. But once they get into the systems, it could take years and years if they're lucky, to get out of it, you know, to get sort of satisfaction. But it is such a hard thing to deal with institutional abuse and enabling. And we did a couple of years worth of these shows, and I'm so glad we did. Then the person that we did them with got kind of busy and you know, had to go off and do something else. But they're still there on our website. If you're interested, go to the word Jill, J-I-L-L, on the website. So NASCA.org/Jill, and you'll see a few dozens of shows that all deal with institutional abuse and enabling. And as I say, it has to do with things like family courts and federal courts and foster care and so forth. So they're all about it. We don't hear enough about it in terms of being able to transmit the information to people. So I'm glad you brought it up, because we need to keep it alive, you know, this sense of what's happening to our children in the institutions that are supposed to help them. They turn out to be traumatizing. So I'll be quiet and let you have the time, because you got a lot of story left.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you very much.
You're so right.
Thank you, Bill. So I'm going to bring on Tamika. Tamika, you're back on with Kathleen.
Thanks, Penelope. Yeah, I want to say that I want to confirm what was already said, is that your children saw a hero in order to model a hero. Children will model what they see. And for every, if you look in history, I'm sure you have, regarding leaders, people that were light and darkness, many of them had hesitation. Why me? Why should I do this? I'm not good enough, or doubt our way. But the thing is that you've been called, and I think you knew it as a young girl. I believe you knew it as a young girl when you saw the truth and saw the generational errors. And I'm sure as you unfold your story, you have continued, you continue to move forward. I'm glad you're here today, that you did not act on that doubt and removing yourself from this, breaking the cycle, creating a generational cycle of love. I'm glad that you are here, because something wants you here. Something more powerful wants you here, and know that you have the right to be here, to change, to be the change that we need to have. And may I say that what you did as far as the going through with your children and the government is that somebody saw you. You made an imprint on something, somewhere, somehow, that you became the voice within all of this mess. And evidently, your children are showing that. They've shown that you are a voice for them. So nothing you have done has been in vain. And so I just hope that, you know, pray for continued confidence and realization of who you are and the message that you are here to give. And I want to thank you for Kathleen talking about the history of, just briefly talking about the history of children. You know, as I go through homeschool with my kids and I see that, you know, 13-year-olds and what they had to do, this goes way back. And so thank you that you've brought out a lot of great things that need to be addressed in breaking the cycle of pain. So thank you so much again.
Thank you. Thank you, Tamika.
Thank you, Tamika. Thank you. So appreciate you being here. All right, I'm going to bring on Kim Lakin from Colorado. And Kim, you are back on with Kathleen.
Hey, Kathleen. I don't want to take up much time either, because I want to hear the rest of your story. But are you on Facebook? Do you get on Facebook? Kathleen? Oh. I have it.
Yes, she is. So, Kathleen, are you there?
Okay, yeah. Okay, I'm going to find
the
rest. I'll let you
know. No, Kathleen's on.
Oh, was it?
On.
It was muted. No, thank you for all that you're sharing. And it just takes a lot of courage to do everything that you've done. And you continue to show your courage and all that you do. So thank you. I want to hear from
Kathleen.
Yeah.
Kathleen is on. So Kathleen.
Okay.
You just want to respond to that. You are on Facebook, right?
Yes, I am on Facebook.
Yeah.
Yes, I am definitely on Facebook. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, I'll find you there. Thanks.
You can also look at my website, because that will give you a lot of pictures about the story and videos telling, short pieces of the story, and as well as my sons are speaking themselves, telling their story.
Oh, wow.
So to Kim, for you and for our other panel members and for our listeners who are tuning in, when you go into NASCA.org and you go under the current show schedule under tonight's date, there's a hyperlink to our show scan, which is scan 2721. And Kathleen's name is hyperlinked to her Facebook page. So, and her information on how that she also mentioned. So there is a way that you can
access
through the I'm sorry, go on, Kathleen, if you want to give your web address. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, it's my name, that long name, Kathleen with a C, C-A-T-H-L-E-E-N. Last name is PIZZUTELLO.com. And there's some really good, it starts with No More Secrets, and there's videos on there. I really encourage anybody to look at the videos of my teenage sons telling their version of the story.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And thank you, Kim. Thank you, Kim.
Oh, thank you. I didn't know if I was still on. Thank you, Kathleen.
So,
I will. I'll check that out. Yeah.
Okay, now I'm going to put you on mute. All right. So I'm going to bring on Katarina from Calgary, Canada. Katarina, you are back on with Kathleen.
Oh, my goodness. Kathleen, I swear your story needs to be turned into a movie. I was like, if I'm watching this in a theater, I would be like, wow, this is the best movie of all time. Just because it's just so complex. I mean, you have aristocrats, you have history, you have torture. This is CIA stuff, you know? It's really neat. It's very neat. And, I want to hear what's going on with your sons, if they're with you now or they're out there. So I want to let you finish your story. But I do want to say that I'm just blown away. I mean, you are a mentor. You are a true mentor. You're changing lives. So, thanks. Thanks for being on again.
Thank you.
Amazing.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, and thank you, Ekaterina. Thank you for your support and being on the panel this evening. And I agree. So we've got...
Thank you.
Kathleen, you're not going to believe us. We've got 15 minutes left, and I want to give you 14 of them. So I'd like just to give you the floor. I know you've got more story to tell, more to share with us, and I'm just going to give you a little bit, become the time lady at the end, a little bit of a heads up. We've got about a minute left, but I am going to turn it over to you.
Thank you. Well, I think... In order to really utilize the time best, I'd like to give you a little snapshot of a period of time after I had lost my sons for the second time. We had been living in hiding for, 10 years, back and forth. They were catching us. Federal marshals were after us. And I had lost my sons after turning myself into the Atlanta federal judge. I didn't think my country could possibly do this again. Into Argentina they go, and I'm not willing to go with them to risk my life, because the embassy, State Department, says you're going to go to jail in South America. And I was just too exhausted by then. So for 6 months, a couple took me to Florida, and I recuperated, or they were trying to help me to recuperate. I wanted to die. I just didn't want to live. And I kept getting messages from Washington saying, we're getting SOS messages from your sons. They're in trouble. And I thought, you are kidding me. You really think telling me I can't go into Argentina, this family's going to kill me, and my sons are in trouble, and now what? And yet, again, my mother strength, you know, Mama Bear rose up, not for myself, but I went into the country and I prepared to go to jail. And I flew into the country and I was shocked because the embassy kept warning me, you know, go, don't go. And they had someone at the airport, kind of a mafia type lawyer, who had me pay U.S. dollars to a corrupt judge, and they let me out in the street. Now I was free to go find them. And I knew they had been hurt. I knew, you know, they were beaten. I knew they were starving. I knew terrible things. I found them in a little gaucho village, 3-4 hours from the international airport. And I had no car, and I had this big overcoat. My mother had given me a very expensive overcoat. I didn't fit in this little gaucho village, but I found them, and I knew that they needed food. So I got this old black bicycle. You know, I went and bought an old black bicycle, and I had this beautiful coat on, and I found them, and I could visit them at the school through this French headmaster, and they said, listen, let's meet at the cemetery. And I began to ride this black bicycle with this big, beautiful coat on these dirt roads into this old Gothic cemetery and pass them food. And then my ex-husband found out that I was in the country and that I found a way in, and he sent someone to kill me. Now, there was a judge that took the boys and they put him in a hospital under police protection, and I knew that they were safe. So I was at peace because I knew at least someone was going to intervene. And from that, we ended up living in the church for 2.5 years. And it went on and on, so much torture. I had to sleep. They have women police stations in Argentina, only for women. And because the violence against women is just so culturally accepted. I cannot tell you how I made it out of that gaucho village, but I had a lot of help, supernatural help. And I lived with my teenage boys, and they became, you know, I got them back. And I was with my 16-year-old, and I was able to get the 18-year-old, he turned 18 on his 18th birthday. I got him out on an airplane to Florida so he could finish his high school in the States. And my 16-year-old planned his own escape. Now, I could not leave the country because I was like a wanted criminal everywhere. So if I tried to cross the borders, my father-in-law had everybody on the planet looking for me. But my younger son said, Mom, this is something I have to do on my own. And he planned his own escape. He took a 25-hour journey through a bus. He changed his document. He saved all his money for 6 months, and he journeyed up through Paraguay, through Brazil, and he made it out. I made it out a different way. All three of us made it out a different way, and we were reunited in the United States. And then I began to read declassified documents about my CIA, my government, and their connections to the Argentine military, which was the family I married into. And I will end it by saying this. My younger son, who finally made that journey on his own, became a cadet at the Air Force Academy and is now an intelligence officer for the United States military. So that's, to me, a different kind of justice.
Absolutely. That's beautiful.
I guess justice isn't always what you hope it's going to be, you know?
No, it's not. Really, I tell you, Katarina's comment about this becoming a movie, every time you tell another chapter of it, it gets deeper and more sinister and, you know, more fantastical. She's right. Thank you so much for telling us this really intricate story internationally. You know, how it happens, because this is about the trauma of children, our whole organization, and your kids really, of course, you were too, extremely traumatized in your youth, and then your kids in theirs, part of which torture, basically, of them being, they're cogs in a wheel. They don't have a lot of authority in this, but the government and the federal, and this is both for the U.S. and Argentina, the government and the federal systems and the military in Argentina's case and so forth, they're all more powerful than we are, and there's a lot of power. So thank you very much for pulling back the curtain a little bit.
Thank you. Thanks.
Wow. I'm just overwhelmed right now. Kathleen, I'm overwhelmed. But
may I just say this? What people don't understand is we have protection for children in our domestic system, but once it's international, there's no protection. No protection. We could not be protected in that shelter. They told us that. And that's wrong. And that's what I am the advocate for. Because I want to explain this. I want to explain it in movie form, in video form, through a story that people can actually, sometimes you have to show them. They can't be told. They need to see it to understand the plight of women and children that have to live in hiding from our own protectors. That's wrong.
And I think also the fact that this does happen, and it happens more than we realize because of the nature of secrecy and people not talking about it and doing what you're doing. And I think, it happens. And I think that sometimes people don't want to even acknowledge that it happens, right? But it does happen. And I think that we need this education. We need it, even if we don't want to hear it, because all these subjects are so uncomfortable. We don't want to think about these things that happen, but they do. And it takes real courage to break out and be. Sometimes it feels like we're standing alone, and your experience is very, different than mine. But a lot of the feelings are very the same, as Bill would say, right? Our experiences may be different, but a lot of the feelings are the same. To bring that awareness, to continue to voice that and bring that awareness. So it is so important, but a lot of people don't want to hear it because it's hard to hear. It's hard to acknowledge. And if you think it's hard to acknowledge, imagine living through it, right?
Yeah, I think when you suffered as a child yourself, it's harder because you still feel raw.
Yeah.
Right? That's how I felt. But then I just said, no, I'm still alive. There has to be a bigger purpose. Continue the abuse. And that's why it's such an honor to be able to be on your program and at least tell about the generational powers of abuse,
You're helping so, I know this has been stated, and I don't mean to overstate it, but I feel that it's so important to emphasize, you never know when you come on a platform like NASCA, like you did tonight so bravely. And while you appreciate the platform that NASCA offers, we appreciate you for having the courage to come on, because you help so many people, whether you realize it or not. So you may not, I don't want to make things about myself, but today marks the 4-year anniversary of my father's passing. My father severely abused me in all different forms. All the different forms. And I'm the one that has broken the cycle. And today is a reminder for me, not only of him passing, but the fact that my family, who wish to remain in a pattern of secrecy, I have been thrown out, if you will. I am no longer a welcome member of my own family. Hearing your testimony tonight, even the very beginning, reminded me and inspired me as much pain as I'm in to keep going on, to keep doing what I'm doing. You inspired me. So whether you realize it, even for me today, it's been a rough day. Your testimony has really helped me move forward, because today is when we all have those days where we're like, Was it all worth it? Can I keep going? I've paid a high price. Thank you.
Thank you.
Truly.
Thank you. Thank you. All of our hearts are all very tenderized towards this this plight, and you know, I thank you so much. I thank you all so much.
We have
May I just say I just want to say one thing. I'd like to leave your listeners with a visual.
please.
Oh, this is just so spectacular because this is something I latch onto a lot. My son that planned the escape and became a cadet at the Air Force Academy, it was tough going, him graduating and getting through that. But at the graduation, when he marched into the stadium in his uniform and he ran up into this big stadium way up high where I was when he graduated, threw his hat in the air and ran up and lifted me up in the air. And he did that right in front of his father from Argentina was there. And he was saying, we made it, we survived. And it's a beautiful memory for me, not just because it was in front of the person that really wanted to do us harm, but because we were free. We were free, right? And now I can be the voice for other mothers.
Right.
That was the validation. Right. Exactly. Thank you for sharing that and leaving us with that. Because we don't always get validation. We don't always get that. Never. But you share with us that it's possible, and you did, and I'm so thankful for that. And so if you had just a few sentences, we have a minute left to leave our to leave our listening audience with something. Could you leave us with something? I'm sorry. Somehow my mic got muted. Could you leave us with a couple words?
Oh, my. I would say this, oh, my. Do not give up. If I'm anybody that gave up so many times. But if you have to believe, just believe that there's a purpose in all of the suffering and that it can be used for good and that it will not always show up in our timing, for sure. But there is a higher calling, and it's worth it. It's worth it.
Thank you
and
so very much.
And please don't turn your back on kids. Let's all, as a nation, as a culture, as a country, find it in ourselves to look, because their suffering is way, way more than worth looking away. So please find the courage. Please find the courage to look and be the voice of a child in any way.
Absolutely. Thank you so very much. Absolutely. That is part of NASCA's mission. I just wish to thank you, Kathleen, for coming on and being our guest tonight on behalf of NASCA. I want to thank Bill Murray, our CEO and founder, being on my host team and our panel, Kim Lakin and Ekaterina and Tamika from Oregon. I wish to thank you all, and I wish you all a very good night.
God bless you all. Bye. Thank you so much.
Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.